IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. Donald Trump is about to visit India, and we're going to look at what his visit means for India and what the Donald Trump presidency has meant for India. What are the opportunities it has provided? What are the threats or new challenges it has created? I have with me today Manoj and Pranay. I want to start with you, Manoj. Donald Trump is landing on Monday. He is going straight to Sabarmati Ashram. Mm-hmm. He's going to do a nice trip in Gujarat, and then he's going to Agra, Delhi. But, you know, besides all this pageantry, what can we really expect from this visit?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say besides the pageantry, because the pageantry, I think, is one sort of central component of the visit. And that's sort of India's reciprocating what, the Howdy Modi event. And he has a long schedule where he gets, given that we know that he doesn't enjoy traveling that much. He's going to be landing in Ahmedabad. He's going to be having that big event in that Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel Stadium in Ahmedabad. And then from there, goes to Agra for that customary picture at the Taj Mahal. And then in Delhi, a bunch of events apart from the official reception to then discussions at Hyderabad House. Now, what are the things that are likely to be on the table? A bunch of things. Trade is likely to be on the table, depending, but we don't know what exactly can be the outcome, given that before getting here, he's already said that we should not be really expecting a trade deal and that he might want to keep for some other time. And also, neither side has really moved forward. The fact that Robert Light has canceled his trip to India tells you that there isn't much of an agreement. But then, you know, you never really know. I mean, Trump is not a nuts and bolts guy. So, you know, the fact that Light has just canceled a trip, that does not mean that he won't come out and say. And he likes the fact that when a meeting ends, when a summit ends, he likes a big announcement. So, you know, you never really know, what the nuts and bolts of it would be worked out later. And you could actually see some sort of an announcement. But that's the big issue. But there are also sort of strategic issues with regard to the defense partnership between India and the US. And there's talk about India buying more hardware from the US. And that is something that could be announced. And that's important given the fact that one of our objectives from our point of view is also that a deeper India-US partnership should enhance India's national security capabilities. So that is a good thing for us. You are likely also to see some sort of reiteration of a strategic commitment with regard to the Indo-Pacific. Both sides have fairly different visions of what the Indo-Pacific is. If I can even say either side has a concrete vision, it's complex, but, you know, they still have very different visions, at least from what has been articulated by both sides' documents and leadership statements. So you might see something of that feature. You might see something to the effect of, you know, the idea of free and open seas and those sorts of things could feature in. You could see something with regard to connectivity projects and the idea that you might not see anything new announced, but those are the kinds of things that you will see in the statement with regard to the fact that we want to work together on connectivity projects. The US has pledged some money for those sorts of things in the South Asian region. And you could see some of that being announced. So to me, those are the sort of broad strategic things that could be announced. But trade would be the point of friction. And I don't see that friction going away.
Yeah, I'm assuming Trump will want to go back with some sort of win, right, Pranay? So if it's not trade, is it going to be defense deals?
Yeah, possibly defense deals or some sort of alignment on trade, specific trade items, you know, if not a trade deal. So we heard the news about this Harley-Davidson controversy, which was going on, that getting resolved kind of things, right? Yeah. So a few of those things, the model I have in mind of all this is that it's about taking one step forward, one step back, and now you're finally reset by going one step forward. So you're still at the same position that you started off
with. Yes, but new branding.
Yeah. So look at it from a overall angle, right? See, what are the opportunities that Trump presidency provided? So one, for example, US's position towards China has moved along the lines that India has been saying from a long time, right? That it is a strategic threat. You have enabled a lot of the things that now US is talking about. That India has been saying from a long time, maybe Trump government gets it more than the previous administrations, right? So that is one sort of opportunity. Second opportunity is that Trump government is not so much concerned about Pakistan as a big player. So it means that, again, it says India, there's no hyphenation as such, right? India and Pakistan are seen at different levels. These are two broad opportunities, but utilizing any of these opportunities rests on this framework that Trump has about reciprocity. Right. And that reciprocity is, he sees it through trade deals and trade deficit specifically, yeah. Reducing the trade deficit. And there we have a problem on both sides.
Yeah.
The Indian government is hell-bent on doing things which are going to the heady days of import substitution, where we are increasing all our, in the name of make in India, we are doing all sorts of things. And that is not helping what Trump wants either, right? That is the logjam currently. And both the sides are not willing to give up on that count. And hence, even though opportunities exist, we are not moving anywhere close to the potential that they present us with.
Yeah, we've seen India trying to supposedly close that trade deficit by buying oil and by doing defense deals. But a lot of this is going to be one-off, right? I mean, once, say, capacity in the Middle East increases, India is going to switch back to a lot of Middle Eastern oil, for example. So it just seems to me unsustainable without fundamental restructuring of economics. But does Trump expect such a fundamental restructuring, or is he just looking for something symbolic?
I mean, I don't know the US politics and how it would operate, but let's assume that, I mean, I think people overestimate this thing when they say a lot of international relations is about domestic politics for Trump. I think that's true for any politician, right? Like, why is it different for Trump? So even for him, it would be similar. What things can he project back home? What do his constituents want, etc., right? So the main point is that he really believes in that reciprocity argument, that a lot of nation states have been having a good time at the expense of the US. Now, if you start off from that angle, irrespective of what the other nation states do, you are not going to be convinced, because if your index is trade deficit, and for a consumption in US, there will be higher consumption. So there will be a trade deficit with all any country which is below the developmental stage of the US and producing.
Yeah.
So if that is the index of his measurement, then no country is going to meet it very soon.
I think if I was to take that reciprocity one step further, the other way it has manifested is the idea of burden sharing. And this is the American treaty allies have had to struggle with. Now, if you go back to Trump's comments about India's support in Afghanistan, where he spoke about, oh, they built a couple of libraries, what's the point of this and that sort of stuff. Given the fact that he clearly wants to pull out of Afghanistan, and that creates a new sort of threat matrix for us, threat and opportunity matrix for us. And at the moment, there is nothing from the Indian government that tells us that we have a plan, a post-US withdrawal plan. I'm sure there is one, but I don't know of any one that I've heard of. In that context, it would be interesting to see what is discussed with regard to Afghanistan. There has been some argument in Indian media about possibly India putting boots on the ground in Afghanistan. It's not serious official consideration. These are sort of debates within the media. So one would have to see if these are the kind of things that we would have to eventually consider, given the fact that the US is keen on and is already negotiating some sort of an agreement, despite the collapse of that peace deal last year. I mean, last week there were some reports about them talking to the Taliban again. And
yeah, 29th, they're going to be talking to the Taliban again.
Yeah, so we're going to see something come in that context. So I think that would be one more issue. And if Trump is sort of saying that, or if our intention is that the US must continue to stay because that serves our interests in some ways, then he might sort of be keen to ask us, well, what is the kind of burden that you're willing to share? And given his previous rants, it doesn't seem like development assistance or, you know, building the parliament building or things like that, or road construction is not going to cut it for him anymore. So there might be something more that he may ask of us in that. So that's the one other thing that I would sort of note as something to discuss. The other point I mean, on the 12th of February, you had this bipartisan group of senators talking about Kashmir and internet shutdown in Kashmir and so and detention of political leaders and those sorts of things. I don't see Trump being worried about it, given the fact that the U.S. ambassador was one of the ambassadors to be taken on tour to Kashmir. So I don't see Trump particularly being worried about it. He doesn't seem to have the same penchant for, you know, that messianic missionary zeal for human rights that previous U.S. administrations have had. But it is something to note that this is an irritant which has come back in this relationship. Yeah. It didn't exist for a long period of time. Yet it's back. So from an Indian government point of view, I would assume that the objective would be that this gets glossed over. So if it's mentioned in some statement somewhere, that will be something that the Indian government would not be happy with. So their objective would be to see that this doesn't get mentioned. But the fact that this is back as an irritant in this relationship is something that we need to take a note of.
Like every moment spent on discussing J&K is lost on not discussing some other more important topic, right? And now, given that it's become a major irritant, that more and more time and effort, capacity will be spent around managing that.
Yeah, just the fact that our diplomats have to spend this energy, you know, while on Twitter, you can argue about Jaishankar's response to Lindsey Graham and how, you know, what a tight slap it was. The fact that you have to spend time doing that, whereas you could actually be talking about, well, okay, how do we work together to build capacity to deal with the Chinese in the IOR or something else? Yeah. How do we improve prosperity, you know, smooth out trade frictions? I think the fact that we are wasting the opportunity cost of that is far too high.
Aditya, tell me one thing. We had all these Lemoa and all those agreements, right? What's been the status of that?
So India has signed the Lemoa, which is the Logistics Memorandum of Agreement, and also Comcasa, which is a communications agreement. And there's a third geospatial agreement, which India has yet to sign. They're still negotiating. Now, the terms of these, all of these are bespoke in the sense that they've been tailored specifically for India, and the terms are secret. On paper, what they would achieve is, for instance, Lemoa would give technically India access to Diego Garcia, which is an American military base. So it would technically give India much greater reach on the seas. Comcasa would give India access to a lot of American hardware, especially unmanned systems. Where some Indians are concerned is that these agreements are designed essentially to tie India into American standards, to American protocols, and basically to American hardware, to buying more American hardware in the future, which is actually a fairly reasonable concern. But I think that what these agreements, you know, and labeling India a major defense partner, all these things are the areas where India and the US are converging, you know, specifically on the Indo-Pacific with the Trump administration. At the same time, I see a sort of return to form, like you talked about Kashmir, you know, where when non-proliferation and Kashmir and all these type of issues, you know, basically took away a lot of the energy from the Indo-US relationship. Then you really had two presidents. You had Bill Clinton and then George W. Bush taking the initiative to change the nature of that relationship. We really haven't seen that sort of energy coming, at least from the U.S. side, with either Barack Obama or with Donald Trump. And a lot of this criticism, say, about Kashmir suggests that the problem in the India-U.S. relationship goes beyond leaders, goes beyond presidents. You know, the limits in the convergence between the India and the U.S. are showing. What is the India-U.S. relationship really built on? To me, it is, one, its convergence on China, and two, its trade opportunities. If the two countries are not so gung-ho about trade, that's a serious detriment. The one part of the relationship that to me is working is the convergence on China.
So, Manoj, given that China is a, say, strategic threat that both countries recognize now, what do you think should India be asking for? Let's forget about what actually happens from a US president.
What should India be asking for? I think what we should be asking for is greater equipment capacity development. That's the one thing, at least. I mean, things like that, Lemoa, which sort of give you access to bases and all, is great.
But even also, if it gives a bit more to the U.S. or something, right? I mean, those arguments, I think, are overdone.
It does give a little bit more to the U.S., but we need that extra capacity a lot more.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, fundamentally, this is about India's sort of armed forces capacity. The fact that we need to be able to compete with the Chinese on a number of different areas, continentally, in the waters, everywhere. And we don't have the money to spend on some of these things. So therefore, it would be great to actually work with the US, not just in terms of the equipment that we develop, but also in terms of sort of technological support in terms of training, drills, so on and so forth. Expanding India's capacity in terms of defense sector overall. That would be the first thing. Also, it is fundamentally important, like Aditya said, that we should be talking to the Americans about how can we deepen trade while sort of being able to somehow protect our internal sort of, you know, without being overwhelmed. That's the challenge that any Indian government has, because we need to have trade, we need to have investments from the US and from other places in the West so that we can actually grow our market, we can actually grow our economy. Because that is essentially going to be what eventually brings us the strategic autonomy in the long run that we kind of anticipate or we hope for. Those are the two sort of broad things that I think we should be talking to them about. Therefore, things like import substitutions, things like heightened tariffs on certain things like, say, medical equipment, whatever, while they may make domestic sense, they might not necessarily be strategically helpful in the long run. So I think that is the kind of thing that we need to approach this relationship with. Expanded training with American forces is great. And I think those are the things that we are doing well. Those are things that we are doing well, and I think we should continue to do them well. The idea that we are getting into disagreements over issues which shouldn't necessarily be a big issue in the bilateral relationship. Kashmir, for example. I mean, every time Trump says something about Kashmir, there's this whole sort of reactionary sort of syndrome that begins in the India about, oh, what have we gotten from the Americans? And now they're even pushing us on Kashmir. So there are two types of reactions. One is this, and the other is, oh, this government has failed so badly that now Kashmir is internationalized. Those are the two kind of reactions that we get. I think we need to move away from that. We need to, again, bring back the story to India as a development destination, India as a market, invest here, and get more capital in. More capital in, more expertise in. For that, there's lots that we need to do. Education. For my life, I can't figure out why we don't have foreign universities in India, why we don't have that capacity, that money that's coming into India. We need it.
Yeah.
So I don't see why we don't do some of those things. So a lot of it is domestic, and I think we need to approach it far more strategically. Rather than asking the Americans for something, we need to make those reforms internally.
Yeah, no, I think foreign universities and all are a great point. Right? We need to build human capital anyways.
Yeah.
And there are basically US universities which will tailor the courses for Indian requirements, and we should open those up. And it then also helps us say to Trump that, you know, your trade deficit, we are also getting people here and all that.
Right? The argument is this, right? We lament brain drain. Oh, all you people who study at IITs then go to the US and make your living over there. But give them the opportunities here. Just open it here. And actually, you will then see reverse brain drain. Rather than calling on some sense of nationalistic sentiment for people to leave lives and career opportunities to come back to India, rather than just invite, make sure the environment here is inviting for people to come here.
I think that, remember, we have this one idea about swing power, right?
Yeah.
Which Nitin has written about earlier, and we've discussed that many times in the office, right? That India should be able to have the capabilities to swing between US and China, have enough so that whichever side it is on emerges as a winner. But now look at the last three, four years with our economy going down. Our ability to hurt or to provide gains to the other side, to the side that we are on, has decreased, right? So now I think we need a calibration on that count, and probably we should bandwagon with US for some time, at least, until we gain the strength to then be able to swing, right? It's a game of relative power, and now our relative power is decreasing. So we should probably consider, even if it means giving away more on some count to the US, and then try to build our own capacity in that process.
Yeah.
It's paradoxical, right? Just as India's economic growth is slowing, India is also getting more protectionist and is basically doing more things to upset the United States instead of, you know, maybe making more concessions. I'm going to ask you both one question. What if Trump wins the presidency again? What are the opportunities and costs for India then? And how should India navigate, say, those next 4 or 5 years?
I'm assuming that he will be sort of in power again. But okay, what happens on that? His rhetoric is clear, right? It's a lot about trade deficit, etc. So we need to be able to project that, you know, there are advantages to be had on the trade front while dealing with India as well, right? So more relationships, US companies being able to gain by coming into India, there will be pressure on us to do that. And I think we should also go ahead in that direction, reducing tariffs, etc. So that is what we could expect. We can also expect that the relationship with the US-China dynamic will continue. They see themselves as structural rivals. So that confrontation might continue, which is not very bad for us. So that's the opportunity, right? And then there's the potential there.
So assuming that his past behavior informs future actions, if he gets reelected, and I mean, to me, some of his incentives will change once he gets reelected because he no longer can have a third term or anything like that. So yet he might want to have headlines that he likes. And also, if he gets reelected, the domestic furor, which has been around his first term, you know, the Mueller report and Russian interference and all that, goes away. So it might be a little bit more sane than what it is right now. But then I'm really putting my head on the chopping block by saying that. The threats that I would see, given the fact that, you know, trade is a big threat, Pranay has spoken about it. But the other threat is also what Trump does to global institutions going forward. It doesn't seem likely that he's going to, even if he gets reelected, going to sort of turn on global institutions like the UN, the WTO and these sorts of entities and say that, okay, now the US is back and, you know, we are going to support this in these institutions. It seems like he's going to continue to pull back and he's going to continue to look at striking bilateral deals with different power centers, whether it's the EU, whether it's Mexico, Canada, whether it's China. Now, there is an opportunity in that he will have a contest with the Chinese, which is there, which exists. But there is also the case that he may cut tentative deals, which may make it very difficult for us to move coherently forward in one direction, whether bandwagoning or anything like that, because that will create, you know, let's assume that Trump cuts a deal with the Chinese 2 years from now on technology or on something like that, on the internet or something like that. And that sort of creates more problems for us, because where do we lie? How do we plan where we lie? And I think that's why sort of it'll be difficult for us to figure out where policy should be, given how unpredictable he can be. The threat also of him sort of undercutting global institutions means that, you know, for a power like India, which bilaterally cannot impose costs on major powers, or at least the extent of costs, can constrain them through institutions, that becomes challenged then further. So then that's another sort of difficulty that we enter into. The opportunity is that if this contest with the Chinese continues, like Pranay said, we can actually leverage the US much more. We can possibly bandwagon. But it again depends on how Trump eventually cuts deals. And what he's shown is that he's willing to cut deals. And just the depth of those deals and what sort of relief they provide is what we'll have to look at.
Aren't we overemphasizing the individual here?
I think so.
All this?
Yeah. No, I'm not denying that. But I mean, if I was to look at his China policy, what one would see is that Congress is very clear. The sort of strategic community is very clear, which is evident in your national security strategy, congressional reports and so on and so forth. But yet he's gone ahead and cut a trade deal with the Chinese, which is largely symbolic. Yet it rolls back some tariffs and it eases some pressure. There are other things that he's doing which is going to continue to add pressure to the Chinese. Yet the fact that he is willing to cut certain deals at certain points for whatever benefit he saw, I don't see why the US wanted to cut this deal. It made no sense to me, apart from domestic constituencies going and selling it to them and selling agricultural products for, again, gain domestically. Because you've got a limit here for 2 years. 2-3 years is when you're looking at agricultural products. Would you want to jeopardize that a year from now by ratcheting up pressure against the Chinese and the Chinese sort of disputing things and whatever, whatever? Maybe not. So again, it depends on what he wants to cut, what his incentives are at a certain point of time. And he's shown that he can individually drive this policy. The fact that he actually cut a trade deal basically saying you will buy more agricultural products and you will buy this quantity of agricultural products tells you that he had enough sway to be able to push that through. So I agree, there is an overemphasis on the individual. But the individual has been extremely unpredictable.
Yeah.
The fact that he pulled out of these, the TPP, the fact that he said, I'm going to reorganize NAFTA completely, although it's not significantly been reorganized, but he just wanted a new veneer on it. But the fact that he's managed to get that through the system tells you a little bit that he's managed to do certain things. Mm. And his unpredictability has managed to get the system to heal. Mm. So the challenge is that how that friction also plays out.
My understanding on this is that the instrument that they used using tariffs, etc., was the wrong instrument they used because it was impacting his own constituents. Yeah. And the impact of all these tariffs was being felt. I mean, we know from economics that it will be the consumer will also have to bear it. And in fact, a lot of studies also showed that a disproportional amount of burden was being borne by American yeah. companies and consumers. Some of them will also be constituents of what Trump yeah. saw. So they had to roll back at least much. But overall, I still feel, so the instrument was wrong, but the direction is still in that China is a challenge, not someone who...
Yeah, no, I agree with the overall direction. What I'm saying is that assuming that he has 4 more years, at any point of time, him cutting a certain kind of deal with the... I mean, it's very difficult for India to rule out the possibility that you will yeah. cut some sort of a deal. Mm. And what that deal, the depth of that deal and what that will imply for India would then create more challenges for India. And therefore, because you're not sure that this is how strategy is going to largely continue without something like this coming in between, it's very difficult to plan a certain action and say, okay, we're going to be, this is our policy, we're going to be drifting this way. It creates more challenges than otherwise it would. The lack of certainty creates more challenges.
Looking at it simply as international affairs, it would seem to me that both India and US over the last few years have made a bunch of unforced errors. And these have come out of responding to domestic constituencies. And I fear that some of this response is not necessarily driven by individuals. If you go back to the 2016 presidential campaign, both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump opposed joining the TPP, for example. Yeah. And repeated polls in the United States show that Americans don't want to be involved in the rest of the world. They don't really care about the South China Sea, for instance. And in India, I think that some of these protectionist instincts are really the instincts of the wider political class and the permanent bureaucracy of our country. I think that where we can see some hope is if an Indian leader takes the initiative, sort of like Bill Clinton did, sort of like George W. Bush did, and in a way that Narasimha Rao did, and bring some fresh air to this relationship. Thank you so much for this conversation, Manoj and Pranay. And thank you for joining us on All Things Policy.
Thank you.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.
Hey, it's been another great week on the IVM Podcast Network. On All Things Policy, Ananya Desai and Rohan Pai discuss recurrent bans on fireworks during festive seasons in India and discuss possible solutions to tackle India's air pollution problem. On the Habit Coach podcast, Ashton Doctor welcomes Sahil Mehta, an esteemed mountaineer and author of the book Break Free. Sahil shares a transformative experience which became the catalyst for embracing discipline and fulfillment. The episode explores the profound impact of vulnerability on personal growth. Folks, if you like our shows, do spread the word. Tell your friends and don't forget to rate and review them wherever you're listening to them. Follow us on social media. We are IVM Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. You'll also find all our shows on YouTube at youtube.com/IVM Podcasts. And finally, we would like to thank our sponsors this week. Omidyar Network India, Abbott, IDFC First Bank and Save Life Foundation. Thank you for making this possible.